Today we go from writing books to reading books on Scribble.
Welcome to Scribble, 30 minutes of conversation, comments, and reviews on reading and writing, editing, publishing, and selling books. I'm Roald Tweet.
And I'm Don Wooten. Don Erickson is an avid reader. Garrison Keillor is a man who keeps the Writer's Almanac. We'll hear from both of them today on Scribble. It's all your fault, Don. You keep recommending books to Roald. And so when we're looking for somebody who reads books, he says, well, Don Erickson reads books all the time. Is that how you spend your time, Don?
That is how I spend a lot of my time. I'm a retired English teacher from Augustana. I'm retired for about 3 or 4 years. And first thing I discovered when I was retired was that I could do whatever I liked.
Yeah.
like a horse let out to pasture. And one of the second things, I discovered was that one of the things I like to do that I hadn't really felt like I'd ever had time to do enough of was reading. So I've become an insatiable reader. I guess I always was, but while I was teaching, I read something like a book a week that was written by students.
And wrote in the grading, too.
And I had to sort of explain why it was, disappointing.
One of your colleagues, Harry Stelling, once figured out at over coffee that he'd written the equivalent of about 12 novels in comments in the margins of student themes.
Yeah, I think I probably did that, too.
Oh, I think so.
And suddenly being free from all that, I just, I started wandering.
You know, the interesting thing to me is when I taught the senior English classes at Alleman, I probably read more books that year than at any time in my life while I was teaching. It seemed that every time a different author would come up, I'd grab a biography or something to read about him. And I look back at that and I think, how did I have the time for that? Because the day was filled, at Alleman from 8:15 to 2:15 and TV station 2:30 to 11. And I think, where was the time for reading? And yet I read. I read constantly. And now that I'm at leisure, I read now and then. I don't know what it is that drives you to read. You read all the time, Tweet.
Well, I mean, mostly books that Don suggests. the question I want to ask Don is, first of all, when were you first aware that you were a reader? And then probably tied in with that is, are readers born, not made? I mean, can you as an English teacher, I've thought about that myself, can we turn someone into a reader?
Well, I think my life proves that the answer must be yes, because I myself was turned into being a reader. I was not a reader when I was a kid. I think there was a corner in my bedroom where books sort of stacked up that people gave me for my birthday, books about dogs and horses and, various. I liked my mother reading to me when I was real small, but when I had a chance to be reading myself, except for maybe an occasional Bobbsey Twin book or something like that, I had become interested in information, and I was a budding scientist, and I had a chemistry set, and I did some pretty dangerous things that came pretty close to burning the house down. My parents taught me. My mother was a nurse. My father was a math teacher, become administrator. They taught me unintentionally that, literature, for instance, was sort of suspicious, hardly worth your time. And I, lived and breathed that sort of atmosphere for a pretty long time. It wasn't really till the middle of my college career. I started college expecting to be an engineer, had a slide rule and a T-square and all that sort of stuff, and took calculus. We got all the way through calculus, just where the glory of mathematics sort of starts once you've got calculus. But I had to take a few required classes and things like world masterpieces, you know. And I'm not the only person for whom the sort of watershed experience was Dostoevsky. You know?
Oh, yeah.
I read Brothers Karamazov because I had to. Well, I mean, I started it because I had to. And then it just something took, you know, something happened. Arthur Miller tells the same kind of story about his experience with Dostoevsky as a young fellow. And it took a couple years before the, you know, sort of conversion was complete, and it made my college 5 years instead of 4 years. But the last couple years, I was an English major. And
it's interesting because my reading, childhood literature, of course, was special. Tom Swift, Jerry Todd, all those old series, Bobbsey Twins as well. But mine veered to science. Nonfiction. And it wasn't until I hit the Dostoevsky summer after I was out of college and married and went to see the movie, The Brothers Karamazov, and with me was Father Frank Woolner. And he was all the way through. I said, what's the matter? He says, it's the book. The book is where it is, not the movie. So I got the book. And he was right. And I read all of Dostoevsky that summer. It could be pretty depressing at times.
Well, it's interesting. I started out, too, reading almost nothing but science. I mean, this was early when I was in second or third grade. I think probably by fourth grade I'd read every book on ants and bees in the Jackson Public Library and in the public school. I just became fascinated by that one narrow area.
Yeah.
But I've always been I'm a bad kind of person to have at a cocktail party because if there's any reading matter, always from the very beginning, I've read, right? I read cereal boxes. I just like the act of reading, right?
That's true. But Don, have you zeroed in on a particular kind? Is it fiction in general? Do you go for particular genres of literature?
Well, now that I'm, wandering, it'd be hard to put in any sort of nutshell just sort of where my wanderings take me. But one of the directions is, in some respects, kind of full circle again, back to science or at least to nature, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I could spend 5 or 10 minutes trying to persuade you because I've become persuaded myself that, Darwin's book on earthworms is wonderful. It really is.
Well, all science, I find all science books fascinating. The fact that I turned away from science because I figured if you're going to be a scientist, your focus becomes narrower and narrower. Pretty soon you'll want to know everything about one particular thing. But some people pull themselves out of that, like E.O. Wilson. He was focused on ants. But then as he delved into that, all of a sudden he spread out to all of living things. But most scientists just become so specialized, and I didn't want that. I wanted to know everything. I didn't want to know everything about one thing. I preferred to know something about everything. And so I pulled out of science. But that was, you know, science has a strong pull. I still subscribe to Science Magazine and Science News and all that stuff. But is yours more ecological?
Well, certainly that, yeah. I mean, I was persuaded, or I began to be persuaded, sometime in the 70s by a visiting lecturer, Phi Beta Kappa visiting lecturer at Augustana College, that the atmosphere was a serious problem. You know?
Yeah.
And that guy came and put that famous hockey stick on the on the screen, and that was a kind of a conversion moment for me, though again, it took a while before the conversion was complete. And it now seems to me that that the ecological issues, more or less associated with global warming, are the decisive human issue of our age. And I read almost every good book I can find on that subject.
I don't think we're going to do anything about it. They're up to their ankles down in Florida now with the supermoon, and the tides rising a little higher.
Yeah.
And the threat for flooding all along the East Coast is now recognized to be serious, except in a couple of states where the governor said you can't talk about it. But, global warming is the serious human problem on Earth. No question about it. And I don't see anything happening until there is a certifiable catastrophe of epic proportions. And then, of course, it'll be a matter of adjusting rather than correcting.
Don, how do you go about finding books? I mean, you seem to find books that I've never even heard of, and I wonder where...
I keep finding books that I've never heard of.
Well, how do you find them, right?
Well, I mean... One way is just that one good book leads to another, because there aren't very many good books, especially, but not exclusively nonfiction. There aren't very many good books that aren't derived in some important respects from other books. It was, for instance, Earthworms. I was plumping for Darwin's Earthworms book. I mean, I got turned on to Darwin's Earthworms book, of which I think I had never even heard, by a book by Adam Gopnik, a New Yorker staff writer. And that was a book he wrote 7 years ago, something like that, a kind of a commemorative book about Lincoln and Darwin, who happened to have been born within like hours of each other, and so anniversaries were being celebrated. And he wrote a book that was, partly trying to sort of catch that moment, but it was a much deeper book than that, mm-hmm. than just that occasion required. And I mean, he led me to the Earthworm book.
Yeah, a guy who can write lucidly about science is still my favorite. Anybody who can do that. Although Gary Wills can write about anything, and I'll read it.
Me too.
Yeah, and how does a guy do that? How can he be so good in so many fields and so deep? But golly, anything by Gary Wills is worth your attention. A little book on Julius Caesar knocked me out, but I digress. How about fiction? What do you do in fiction?
Well, I mean, I've discovered all kinds of fiction that didn't really fit the kind of curriculums that I was associated with, sort of have blown me away since. Penelope Fitzgerald, for instance, is a novelist who I don't remember who sort of directed me toward Penelope Fitzgerald, some book or some review, and suddenly I had to read all of Penelope Fitzgerald.
Isn't that the way it goes? You find an author who pleases you, and then you just rummage through everything that person has done.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's wearying, I tell you.
I've liked the nonfiction books you've sent me, particularly the ones on nature. But the fiction books that you have discovered and passed on, you've sort of gone through your congregation, St. John's Lutheran Church, like a virus and infected all sorts of people, who then go on and infect other people. So a lot of the books you've suggested, keep going and going and going.
Well, I'm glad to hear it. That is, in fact, one of the relatively short list of things I sort of miss about teaching, because, I mean, teaching for me was,
right,
as much as anything else, just, you might like to read this, whether it was on the reading list for the course or something you were suggesting otherwise, and getting people connected with the books that, sort of fit them or that they, didn't know they needed till they read it. But then as soon as they read it, they knew.
It's a very human thing to want to share joy with another person.
It's, yeah.
If you find something that really speaks to you, that really works for you, you're eager for others to read it, see it or whatever.
Yeah, that's what kept me going as a teacher.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's, but You don't have any particular... how are you on mystery stories? Do you read those?
I've never had the passion for mysteries that some of my colleagues have had, though I, you know, sort of burned my way through...
Louise Penny?
Louise Penny. One very cold winter a couple of years ago. She sort of helped me summon the courage to go outside in the cold with my dog four or five times a day.
And, that's a very persuasive writer, I'd say.
Do you... scan book reviews to find books to read, or do you?
Yeah, I mean, there are fewer and fewer places where there are really good book reviews. That's one of the sorry facts of our time.
You have to spend money on the Times Literary Supplement, the London Review of Books, the New York Review of Books, and the New York Times Sunday Book Section.
Yeah, yeah.
Those are the four.
The Guardian is pretty good too.
Yeah, Guardian is good too. Yeah. The Brits take literature so much more seriously than we do. And when they write reviews, it just goes on for pages and pages.
Yeah, there are some great American fiction writers that I discovered by reading The Guardian.
Do you ever just go through a bookstore and troll and sort of... Don Wooten... has found a couple of really good books just by, oh, that looks interesting.
Well, when there were good bookstores within you know, walking or easy driving range, but there aren't anymore. Nowadays I do most of my browsing online. And I've become something of a devotee of remaindered books. And one website in particular that I probably won't advertise here, but hardly 3 days go by that I don't browse their, 40,000 books. And I sometimes have in the back of my mind a book that I've read a review of, and I, sort of wait till it costs the price of a hamburger. And
Are you a Daedalus fan?
Daedalus used to be my absolute favorite. I've been buying books from Daedalus from 40 years ago when they were brand new. Nowadays, I'm more likely to repair to bookoutlet.com. But
what do you do with the books you read? Where do you put them?
They're crowding me pretty seriously now.
That is the question that sits on my shoulder all the time. Look at all those books.
Yeah, well.
And, you can't actually do much in resales because a secondhand book goes for nothing practically.
That's right.
But, and in a way, I hate to let go of them, although I've read them, so what's the point? I'm not going to go back and read them again because there's another book waiting.
Yeah. Well, there are some books good enough to reread. You know?
That's true. That's true.
And sometimes the second time is better.
When I first read Lord of the Rings, I went through it like a forest fire. Then I quickly reread it again slowly, and then I read it again every year for the next 5 years. That just happened that way. But you never know when a book is going to do that to you.
Have you ever stopped reading a book?
Oh, yeah. Well, that's one of the advantages of, the book being cheap. The threshold to say yes to it is not very high, so you haven't ventured very much of your pocketbook to get it, and you're signing up for it because it might be interesting and because it wasn't in the public library and so on. And if it lets you down in the third chapter or something like that,
yeah,
there's always more books.
That's true. There are always plenty of other books.
Are you a Kindle reader, or?
I try to be, but I have a real nice iPad right. Air, yeah. Which shows the books up much better than my original Kindle did, but there's just something about a physical book.
There is, holding it. Yeah,
that's true.
And I even think owning it. I mean, somehow, this is ridiculous.
That's the terrible thing. Here are all these wonderful libraries, and I insist on buying books. There's no cure for this illness.
Well, I mean, I'm often, attracted to books that the library has not popped for,
Yeah. Well, they can't cover all the bases, but sounds as if you're doing a pretty good job, John. Don Erickson, our avid reader today, thank you very much for spending time with us. And I'll have to look at that. Darwin on Earthworms. That's new to me.
You can get it free.
You can.
On your Kindle.
I don't have a Kindle. But what I do have is Garrison Keillor, and he has something to tell us about writers. Support for Writer's Almanac on WVIK comes from the Mississippi Valley Regional Blood Center, working together with volunteer donors to provide blood products and services to hospitals throughout the region. Information at bloodcenter.org. So much fun talking to Don today, that Don Erickson, that we don't have much time left for the book bag, but always time for your recommendations.
Well, let me recommend a book that Don just passed to me last week, and which I read and could hardly put down, too. It's a book by Wallace Stegner. You may remember him as the author of Angle of Repose, for which he won a Pulitzer Prize, and other works like Big Rock Candy Mountain. He's a Western writer, essentially. I think there's a rumor that he spent a semester teaching in the mid-1930s at Augustana College when he was a student at the University of Iowa. I haven't been able to track that down, but that was always the rumor at Augustana. The book that Don gave me is just a beautiful book. It's called Crossing to Safety. Crossing to Safety is a phrase from a Robert Frost poem in which Frost talks about those little things that we hold on to in order to cross to safety. In other words, to live authentically all our lives and live successfully. It deals with two couples, both of whom are academics, but who are very opposite. Larry and Sally Morgan from New Mexico, just starting out as a beginning teacher and instructor, and a would-be writer, and Sid and Charity Lang from the East Coast, independently wealthy, coming from Harvard and Yale stock, who meet at the University of Wisconsin as they both start their careers as English teachers, and immediately bond, become inseparable, even though they are so totally opposite each other. And it traces their lives from that beginning meeting at the University of Wisconsin through Larry Morgan, the narrator, becoming a fairly successful writer, and Sid Lang becoming a professor at Dartmouth at the end. But it traces them through their lives and how that friendship somehow sees them both through. All four of these people desperately need each other. And although there's no reason for it from the outside, their friendship allows them each to survive and at the end somehow say yes to life. It's just a beautifully written book.
A tight friendship, a bond between people, is one of the most valuable things you can find in your life.
And they're the kind you wouldn't think they would ever be friends from the outside. But there is some need in each one of the four that allows and forces them, in a sense, to use each other. Life isn't smooth for these people, but it does go well.
So this is by Stegner?
Stegner, right.
And the name of the book again?
Crossing to Safety.
Okay. Well, you cross to safety between now and then. And I'm Don Moot with Roll Tweet. We'll be back to see you in the next edition of Scribble.